Hello, this is Dave with the News Gazette for Sunday, May 24th, 2026. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Memorial Day Weekend, It Could Have Been a Different Story. Centenarian World War II veterans tell tales of war and love. This article is by Jana Wersima, Savoy. About 16 million Americans served in World War II, and over 100,000 of them were still alive as of 2023, according to the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. The agency projected that same year that there would be about 45,400 surviving World War II veterans by 2025, with the number dropping to a little over 5,000 by 2030 and about 300 by 2035. Among the living members of the Greatest Generation are two men who reside in Savoy. Harold Bud Vandiver will be 101 in November, while Harold Wheatley turns 100 in August. "He's a mere pup," Vandiver joked. The two men were among those who attended a Friday service at Autumn Fields in Savoy, ahead of Memorial Day. While the holiday specifically commemorates those who died in the line of duty, the assisted living facility also recognized those who remained during its ceremony. "It's amazing just to have two World War II veterans," said MC Jerry Akers, a volunteer and father of one of the facility's owners. "So we're very proud of those two people." About 416,800 U.S. troops died in the war, according to the National World War II Museum. "I was lucky," Wheatley said. "It could have been a different story. You don't know what you're going to do when you're in there, especially if you're active duty. What I was doing, all you was interested in was making sure you didn't get killed or shot or a disability or something. I was lucky." His plans for Monday include participating in a mourning ceremony at Woodlawn Cemetery in Urbana as part of the Champaign VFW Post 5520 Honor Guard. Vandiver, a chaplain for American Legion Post 1492, will speak at a ceremony at the Savoy Veterans Memorial. "I went in December of 1943 and did my basic training in a camp down in Little Rock, Arkansas," said Wheatley, who initially served in the Army. "I left there and came home on 2 weeks' leave and then went back to the post and went overseas. Didn't waste much time." After surviving the Battle of Okinawa, he was headed off to invade Japan. However, there was a change of plan once the atomic bombs were dropped. Wheatley then reenlisted and served at what would become known as Scott Air Force Base, about 30 miles east of St. Louis, training black recruits as a drill sergeant until March of 1947. Vandiver enlisted in August 1943 as part of the Army Air Forces. He said in a previous interview that he didn't make it to Europe until 1945. "We finally got to England and started flying combat in January, and we were still flying at the end of the war," he said. "Put in 26 missions, I guess it was, give or take." He'd expected to be a ball turret gunner, but was told by the pilot just before going overseas that he would instead serve as bombardier. "I said, I don't know anything about being a bombardier." "Well, you didn't really have to," Vandiver said. "We became what you call togglers." According to the American Air Museum in Britain, the Army Air Forces adapted a method during the war where only one aircraft would aim its bombs, while the others would have men such as Vandiver who toggled a switch to release their bombs over the target. A toggler's job may have been simpler than a bombardier's, but it was just as dangerous, the museum wrote in a social media post. Van Diver was offered the rank of Master Sergeant if he re-enlisted. He chose to go home instead, ending his service in March of 1946. However, he's often wondered what would have happened if he said yes. It's a good thing I didn't go back in, because I would have been right back over in the Korean War, Wheatley said, adding that he spent 6 months in Korea after watching a peace treaty signing in Japan. Van Diver's brother, Bill, died in Korea. When we got home, everybody had been in the service, said Van Diver, who had friends from high school who also gave their lives in the line of duty. Now it's different. You've got the guys that are in now, they're sort of a minority, but the whole country was at war. Both men had some close calls during their service. One time, Van Diver's group had just finished hitting a target in Vichy, France, when it was still under German occupation. The mission was a success, but after turning off the target, their aircraft lost an engine. No big deal, but the problem was we could no longer keep up with the group, so we dropped back behind, he recalled. First thing, the pilot said, "Hey guys, we're all by ourselves. Let's go home on the deck." As they descended, they were caught in the worst weather you ever saw. As the storm was beginning to calm, the co-pilot told the others not to make any sudden moves, but to look out over the starboard wing. They did so, only to see a German twin-engine fighter flying alongside them. "Well, we knew the war couldn't go on forever," Van Diver said, "and within several weeks it did end, but we flew along side by side in this bad weather." Pretty soon, the co-pilot lifted his fingers and gave him a little wig-wag. The German pilot gave his fingers a little wig-wag, and we pulled apart. "A miracle," Wheatley said. Willie had a miracle of his own. He was en route to Japan when a tornado struck. "We lost all our equipment in the ocean," he said. "All I had was my clothes I had on." However, the two men also have some good memories, such as when Van Diver got to see the Northern Lights, or when a friend of Wheatley's introduced him to someone special. "We went to St. Louis for a 30-day leave," Wheatley recalled. "A friend said, 'My girlfriend's working here.' I said, 'Has she got a friend?' The answer was yes, and Wheatley met up with her. They were married a week later and were together 72 years until her death." "That won't happen very often," he said. Continuing on the front page, we have My Turn, Mike Carroll, headlined, "Their Silent Tents Are Spread." "My father served in combat in World War II. Near the end of his life, disabled by a stroke, needing constant care, he spent a year under excellent care at Veteran Affairs, Ileana Health Care System on the east side of Danville. I visited him on weekends, where at the end of each visit, I often toured Danville National Cemetery on the east side of the grounds. Encircling the cul-de-sac in the middle of the cemetery, among the limestone grave markers, were cast iron tablets with poetic sayings that affected me intensely. Here and there were different stanzas, or parts thereof, of a poem by Theodore O'Hara, Bivouac of the Dead. It was written to commemorate fellow Kentucky comrades in arms killed in the Mexican-American War of 1846-48. The most famous part is this first stanza. "The muffled drum's sad roll has beat the soldier's last tattoo. No more on life's parade shall meet that brave and fallen few. On fame's eternal camping ground their silent tents are spread, and glory guards with solemn round the bivouac of the dead." This quote and others from the poem so impressed defense officials that they had cast iron plaques of the poem fabricated at the War Department's Rock Island Arsenal for placement around the nation. The quatrain in the above stanza can be found on McClellan's Gate of 1879, the original entrance to Arlington National Cemetery. It and other parts of the poem appear at Antietam National Cemetery and in 14 others, including Danville's. Their shriveled swords are red with rust, their plumed heads are bowed, their haughty banner, trailed in dust, is now their martial shroud. And plenteous funeral tears have washed the red stains from each brow, and the proud forms, by battle gashed, are free from anguish now. Containing 12 stanzas, Bivouac of the Dead is an elegiac poem or elegy, wistful and mournful, powerfully expressing O'Hare's feelings of melancholy for fellow soldiers who died in battle. The obvious theme is a lamentation for his fallen brothers in arms. His words suggest finality, sad, last tattoo. Bugle call, no more, fallen, silent tents, no one is alive within them. Bivouac of the dead, bivouac being a temporary camp without tents, red with dust, etc. His words were carefully chosen, meant to generate, through the special skill of poetry that distills complexity to its essence through artful use of language, structure, metaphors, etc., and responses of understanding, empathy, and compassion. The neighboring troop, the flashing blade, the bugle's stirring blast, the charge, the dreadful cannonade, the din and shout are past. Nor war's wild note, nor glory's peal, shall thrill with fierce delight those breasts that nevermore may feel the rapture of the fight. O'Hara is trying his best to surmount the limits of language, still largely a mystery as to its origin. Despite its value and effectiveness, words are often inadequate. How, for example, can we adequately convey the love in our hearts for another, spouse, children, God, with mere words? Often words often simply fail us. Within many faith systems, God, seen as transcendent and formless, is often considered ineffable, too wondrous for words. So we try in other ways, in other words, great cathedrals, soaring song, selfless works, passionate prayers. Properly honoring those who sacrifice their lives in battle for our protection through words is likewise daunting, some say ineffable. Rest on embalmed and sainted dead, dear as the blood ye gave, no impious footstep shall here tread the herbage of your grave, nor shall your glory be forgot while fame her records keeps, or honor points the hallowed spot where valor proudly sleeps. Artists of all types have tried to bridge this language gap through their artistry. With paintings, there's Picasso's jarring Guernica, a 1937 piece that powerfully symbolizes the horror and destruction of modern warfare. Of films about war, my favorite is The Thin Red Line, a 1998 movie based on a World War II novel by James Jones. Director Terrence Malick conveys the actual feel of combat, in other words, of a soldier lying quietly in tall kunai grass, waiting to charge up a hill, fully aware of a high probability of death or injury. As he lay in the eerie silence, with only the sound of breeze and rustling of the kunai grass, he hears the occasional faint sound of a sniper bullets zipping through the grass, narrowly missing him. The film is full of such slow and silent moments, including poetic voiceovers, such at the end of the film when, as the surviving soldiers of the bloody Battle of Guadalcanal are shipping off the island, Private Wick, who had just died in combat, asks, "Where is it that we were together? Who were you that I lived with, walked with, the brother?" the friend, darkness and light, strife and love? Are they the workings of one mind, the features of the same face? O my soul, let me be in you now. Look out through my eyes, look out at the things you made, all things shining. The thin red line was often criticized for being too slow and boring, not enough constant and furious action. And military poetry has increasingly fallen out of favor among poetry experts. The unabashedly sentimental tone and language, some might say old-fashioned, flowery, sentimental, of bivouac, came from and evokes an earlier, less urban and witty, less cynical era, when life was hard and honor, service, and sacrifice were the norm. On this Memorial Day, I cannot paint a fallen soldier's pain and horror better than Picasso's Guernica, nor can I showcase through film their horrific end-of-life experiences and deepest thoughts more elegantly than The Thin Red Line. I can't generate more appropriate music, mournful and irreverent, than Taps, nor can I elevate their sacrifice any higher than Christ did when he said, "Greater love has no one than this, that he lay down his life for his friends." But I can remember, I can shut the world out, close the phone, stay off the internet and TV, ignore the swiftly changing world, avoid the political fray, the chaos, to purchase precious solitude, a solitude necessary to contemplate your selfless sacrifice, to think of you every time I see our flag flutter, and a free people enjoying the gifts that were largely laid at their feet by you. Mike Carroll of Tuscola is a retired circuit judge and former state's attorney in Douglas County. Continuing inside the front page, top of the morning. Something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. At what turned out to be their final annual meeting, a bittersweet moment for sure, the women of the Junior League of Champaign-Urbana did what they've been best at for nearly 100 years, provide a comforting and helping hand. Among the many awards handed out May 12th at Logic in Champaign, two $2,500 first-in-the-family scholarships to Urbana High graduates and college-bound Isabel Castillo Perez and Karen Sanchez. On May 31, the local Junior League chapter will call it a day, officially dissolving after close to a century of philanthropy and camaraderie. This decision was not made lightly, President Michelle Marquardt said. Our chapter was built by passionate members, volunteers, and partners who believed deeply in our mission and showed up in meaningful ways for our community. We're incredibly proud of what we've accomplished together. Founded in 1932, the Junior League of Champaign-Urbana was the driving force behind countless community treasures like Courage Connection, Crisis Nursery, and Developmental Services Center. The group rewarded high school girls with scholarships, provided training for members, and hosted a holiday favorite, the Festival of Trees, for 30 years. They're working with the Champaign County History Museum and the archives crew at the Urbana Free Library to document their rich history. Also, the Festival of Trees will continue as Illini Media Group grabs the wheel. Finally, plans call for an alumni network so past and present members can stay in touch. We hope the relationships formed here will continue to grow even beyond the life of this chapter, Marquardt said. And in history, area history, in 1926, a large crowd in Fisher enjoyed a performance by local high school seniors of the play, Am I Intruding? The play is described as a good one, having an all-star cast. Music was provided by the Fisher Orchestra, and the dance given by Miss Doris Menelay was excellent. Out-of-town folks in attendance included visitors from Champaign, Gibson City, Dewey, Fusland, and Rantoul. In 1976, actor Mickey Rooney has been spotted frequently on the Sullivan Country Club's golf course in recent days. He is appearing in a production of Three Goats and a Blanket at the Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan. "I'm having a ball playing golf out here," he said. And in 2011, ever since Governor Pat Quinn's administration said changes in health coverage for state employees and retirees would save the state about $100 million a year, several downstate lawmakers have asked for details that would explain the projected savings. The administration hasn't answered, saying it can't discuss insurance choices until protests filed by two HMOs being dropped as choices for state members, Health Alliance Medical Plans and Humana, are settled. But Health Alliance has learned the Illinois Department of Health Care and Family Services expected to achieve half the projected savings through state members switching to new plans in two Health Alliance core markets, Springfield and Champaign-Urbana, the company said. In international history, today's highlight, on May 23, 1934, bank robbers Bonnie Parker and Clyde Barrow were shot to death during a police ambush in Bienville Parish, Louisiana. On this date in 1915, Italy declared war on Austria-Hungary, aligning with the Triple Entente of Russia, France, and the United Kingdom. Continuing with our communities, from the Urbana Police, Urbana man arrested after gunfire near apartment complex. Property damaged, but nobody hurt. This is by Jana Wersima, Urbana. An Urbana man has been arrested in a Thursday afternoon shooting incident near the Town and Country Apartments that caused property damage but no injuries. Police said they arrested Kenyon Dunn, 20, on charges of aggravated discharge of a firearm, being a felon in possession of a weapon, and possession of a machine gun slash automatic weapon. Officers responded at 12:42 p.m. to the 1000 block of East Kerr Avenue after several calls about the shooting. They were assisted by deputies from the Champaign County Sheriff's Office. On the scene, officers determined that several rounds had been fired, but no one had been shot. However, the bullets damaged multiple vehicles, as well as playground equipment and a nearby apartment building. Officers and detectives then identified an apartment of interest, found a gun inside, and arrested Dunn. The investigation is still ongoing, and anyone with tips or surveillance footage is asked to contact Urbana Police at 217-384-2320. Arrangements can be made for information to be shared privately. Those wishing to remain anonymous can contact Champaign County Crime Stoppers at 217-373-8477 or 373tips.com or via the free P3 Tips mobile app. Information submitted to Crime Stoppers is completely anonymous. Calls are routed to a third-party national call center that receives the information, completes a form, then passes the tip to the appropriate law enforcement agency. Caller ID tracking is not used, and the conversations are not recorded. Crime Stoppers pays cash rewards of $5,000 for tips leading to an arrest in a homicide case, $2,500 for tips leading to an arrest in a felony crime involving a firearm, and up to $1,000 for tips leading to the arrest of those responsible for any other crime. And under a photograph of Jamie Green, Vice President of Patient Care for Carle Health's East Region, poses with Tim Nelson, who is holding his Spirit of Nursing Award at this week's Nursing Scholarship and Award ceremony at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. During the Carle Health Center for Philanthropy's annual event, more than 30 nurses received more than $54,000 in scholarships and awards, supporting advanced education, certifications, and professional development. And from Kathy Reiser's mailbag, we have a question. A couple of spooky old statues are standing guard in a flatbed trailer on Taylor Street in downtown Champaign. Are they going somewhere? Yes, and in fact, they have been installed just around the corner. Perry Morris, Vice President of the Champaign County History Museum Board and local arts historian, says the two sprites were destined for Haypenny Market, a bodega that's in development at 115 North Market Street. They were installed earlier this week, and no one seems to know who sculpted the limestone sprites, but Morris says they once adorned the Monin Real Estate Building in the Flatiron Triangle, a wedge-shaped commercial block bounded by Neal Street on the west, Hickory Street on the east, and Washington Street on the north. That block of the original Hickory Street is now a parking lot and part of the downtown plaza. The June 10, 1969 edition of the News Gazette reported that members of the Champaign County Development Council were pleading for certain historical architectural details to be saved for future use when downtown buildings were raised in the name of progress. Probably not many Champaign residents have noticed that the Monin Real Estate Building in the Flatiron Triangle is adorned with four of these ominous gods, but the CCDC has and would like them preserved intact when the Flatiron Building is raised as a part of the city plan to provide 475 new parking spaces in the core city center, the report said. The CCDC is in hopes that planners can find or create a place for such architectural oddities from the past. It took 57 years for that place to be found or created for two surviving sprites. A 2001 News Gazette article by Kirby Pringle says they were stored in a Champaign City garage for at least 25 years. In 2001, they wound up at the History Museum in the old Cattle Bank building, where they'd been ever since. Morris says the statues will be on long-term loan to the Haypenny Building's owners, Cord and Katie Schroeder. The downtown Champaign sprites may have been inspired by statues created in 1914 for the Frank Lloyd Wright-designed Midway Gardens near Cottage Grove and 60th Streets on the south side of Chicago. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette for Sunday, May 24th, 2026. Please stay tuned.